Blog Talk Radio.
DJ Black Caesar, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm feeling well, my sister, feeling well.
Okay, well, let's get started. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder in our midst, and I greet all of you, DJ Black Caesar, all of the panelists and all of the listening audience in the chat room, as well as those of you who are decided to join us by phone, in our greeting words of peace, assalamu alaikum. And we are, thank you, and we are back for part two of defending Farrakhan, why we must defend him. And certainly this is a man who has been exalted and who is backed by Allah and his Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who truly in his own essence needs no defense. He is one who has done, continue to do what he has done and what he has been instructed to do, regardless of those who speak ill of him, regardless of those that may have denounced him, and regardless of those that say they believe and do not actually believe. He is going to go forth in his mission to do Allah's will. And we have with us the defenders of Farrakhan, which is a group of young pioneers that I am especially proud of for them taking their stance and who have made it their mission to defend the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I am so honored and gracious that they have allowed me personally to work among them. And I want each and every one of them to come forth and introduce themselves, if they would, one by one, and then we're going to get into our topics. Each one is going to address a different attack upon the minister. So I want to start first by having Brother Maurice come down front and center, soldier, and introduce yourself.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you, Queen. My name is Brother Maurice Muhammad, and I'm the leader of the Defenders of Farrakhan. And it's a pleasure to be here. And I believe we're going to leave it all on the show. We're not going to leave anything behind. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay. And Brother Jahad Ali.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you. Brother Jahad Ali, 4-star general of the Defenders of Farrakhan, and here to make my word bond and defend the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan from any slanderer, hypocrite, naysayer, backbiter, disbeliever. Doesn't matter. If you're slandering the minister, then you're on the radar. That's all I have to say, sister. Thank you.
Okay. All
right,
praise is due to Allah. And Brother Walter.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. Come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Brother Walter Muhammad, and I love nothing more than a showdown and a good old-fashioned beatdown of any defamer, slanderer, and gossiper on the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. For nearly 30 years, I've been debating people and defeating them in debates concerning our dear minister, and I want to continue it on the World Wide Web. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes. Wa alaikum salam. Thank you, Brother Walter. And we have Brother Daniel Muhammad, who really needs no introduction. He's been with us many, many times on many different shows. But come down front and center anyway, soldier, and present yourself. I'm not going to ask you to introduce yourself, but present yourself to us once again, please.
Assalamu alaikum. Brothers and sisters, I'm Daniel Muhammad from the Nation of Islam, Miles Mariam in Chicago, Illinois. I want to say that I'm a defender of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and I want you, FOI and MGT, to stand and defend our beloved brother, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam. And I think we have with us also from Detroit, Brother Clive Muhammad. Are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. Come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Brother Clive Muhammad, Muhammad's Mosque number one, student assistant minister at the historic Mosque number one, and I am proud and always will be a defender of our leader, teacher, and guide, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I want to make it very clear that I want to be the one that's very distinct when it comes about, are you with Farrakhan or not? I don't want it to be no question mark nowhere over my head when it comes to that. Is that brother with Farrakhan?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay. And do we have student minister Victor Muhammad with us as well?
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum, dear family. I am Brother Victor Muhammad. I'm the director of Prison Reform Ministry under the guidance and mercy of the Most Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I am his defender. I will defend him to the last breath of my life, the last blood in my body, to the last moment that Allah seems fit that I still serve on this planet Earth. So when I am there, you know that you bet not form your lips to say anything about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because you're going to be in a knockdown, drag-out fight of mammoth proportion that only hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, snow, sleet, and rain could even match the fury I would bring on you for saying a ill word about our beloved minister. Assalamu alaikum.
Okay. And we have with us my beloved and dear brother, my friend, my minister, student minister, James Muhammad out of Tampa, Florida. Just present yourself. There's no need for you to introduce yourself, sir.
Thank you, dear Queen. I'm Brother James Muhammad. I'm honored and blessed to be a student in the ministry of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and a natural defender of God's divine servant, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, not only in words, but in deeds, up to and including, inshallah, with my life. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaikum salam. And we have with us somebody who is always with us, whether we know it or not. And I know he's going to get me, but I can't help but introduce this brother because he is always by my side, and I love him, and I thank him so much for his love and support. Brother Kareem Muhammad out of St. Louis, front and center soldier.
Praise be to Allah.
As-salamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam,
brother.
Salam.
And in the name of Allah, who came to us in the person of Master Farrakhan Muhammad, to whom praise is indeed due forever. Thank you very much for putting me on the spot, because I planned on sitting back and listening this evening. However, that's all right. A lot of best Noah. And I will say this. It has been my experience, not what somebody told me, but it has been my experience, that if it were not for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan,
right,
I personally would be somewhere dead, and I'm talking about physically dead, because I would have remained in the madness and debauchery that I had taken myself into. All I know, regardless of what anyone else can say about him today, is if it were not for Allah, take it or let it alone, coming through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, at key points and times in my life, I wouldn't be around to even serve. So, as I always say, and I'm going to wrap up with this, the best defense of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is for me and any of us is to live the life that he lives, live the life that was given to us by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and then these chumps can't do nothing with it.
Assalamu alaikum. Okay, I pray I haven't missed anyone, and if I have, press 1 on your keypad and I will acknowledge that you're here to speak tonight. But other than that, we're going to go ahead, we're going to move on and start because we do have a lot of people who have a lot of things to share with us. We're going to begin with Student Minister James Muhammad. He's going to address the Southern Poverty Law Center, who came out and named or declared that the Nation of Islam was a hate group. So, Student Minister James, tell us about that.
Yes, ma'am. Always we preface any statements we make in the name of Allah with the name and the help of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, who appeared in the divine person of Master Farad Muhammad, the great Mahdi, and raising up from our midst his Messiah, the exalted Christ, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, through whom we have been given the wonderful example of a human being, deliverer, redeemer, and savior, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. It is on behalf of these three men that I am happy and honored to greet all of you with the greeting words of peace. Once again, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum
salam, sir.
Dear brothers and sisters, let us begin. Let me say in an introductory way, since the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has embarked upon this 52-week series lectures of the time and what must be done, his enemies, both black and white, and black and white, or white and black skin, have come out.
Come on. Come on.
More so than we have ever witnessed before. But we understand this because he's exposing their master, Satan, at his root, at his root. So let us begin. In an article entitled Black Supremacist Nation of Islam Pushes White Dominated Scientology. Now, these are the words published by a group entitled Southern Poverty Law Center, the Hate Watch aspect or Hate Watch component of that particular organization. It is posted by Alaya Nelson on June 7th, 2011. Now, it begins. Two of America's better known UFO-friendly religions, Scientology and the Black Nationalist Nation of Islam, now have more in common than unusual theologies involving intergalactic spaceships for about a year. NOI leader Louis Farrakhan has been telling his followers to embrace Scientology in order to move closer to perfection in preparation for the end times. According to a May 31st article in Final Call, NOI's newspaper, nearly 700 NOI members have become certified Hubbard Dianetics auditors, and more will soon be trained in church in the Church of Scientology techniques to prepare better servants and saviors of the people by helping to clear up their minds and lives. Church of Scientology auditors supposedly help people to ascend to higher levels of consciousness. Although both the Nation of Islam and Scientology embrace extraterrestrial theories as well as self-improvement programs aimed at lifting members to higher and higher levels, they nevertheless make for extremely surprising partners. NOI is a racist hate group that holds that white people are intrinsically, biologically evil, blue-eyed devils. In the group's parlance, Scientology's followers, who include several well-known celebrities and other wealthy people, are overwhelmingly white, although membership is open to all, and its founder reportedly was a racist who long defended South African apartheid. I want to stop here and deal with these assertions and allegations and be considerate of the time. First and foremost, this man asserts that what we have in common with L. Ron Hubbard and the Church of Scientology is our belief in extraterrestrial beings and spaceships, referring to the mother plane. Let me clear that up. First and foremost, they're not extraterrestrial. They are from the planet. In fact, the ship called the mother plane is from the planet, manufactured on the planet Earth. I don't have a lot of time to get into the details of that, but I will say this. It is documented that whites in government, including the former president, Jimmy Carter, knew of this great plane, and said in his campaign address and promises that he knew of these ships, the mother plane and what is referred to as the baby planes, and when he was elected, according to his campaign promise, he would unveil these secrets that the government was holding away from the American public. John Shepard, when he was an astronaut and went up into space, he himself came back and saw and proclaimed that he saw these ships and saw the mother plane. It is documented and chronicled that a Japanese pilot flying on a mission saw a walnut-shaped object in the sky. He said it was the size of about 2 football fields, agreeing with what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said in terms of the size of the mother plane, a half mile by a half mile. All of this is well chronicled and well documented. So it is not extraterrestrial. It is, in fact, from the planet Earth. Now, let me share with you why the enemy would refer to these ships and the apparent people or lives that pilot these ships as extraterrestrial. There's one thing about the enemy. There's one thing about Satan. He's not ignorant, and he's not unknowledgeable of prophecy. He's well aware of Ezekiel and Ezekiel's vision of the wheel. He knows that ultimately that this prophetic information would be made known to the world. And so when the enemy knows that the bold revelation and unfolding of truth is going to happen in the future that will condemn him, he, if he cannot stop it, he will manage it. And that's exactly what he did. Those in power, those Jews who are in the elite of the movie-making industry, embarked upon these movies dealing with extraterrestrials and the potential invasion of aliens to Earth. Is that right?
That's right.
He's managing a reality that he knew one day would become manifest to the American public as well as the public of the world. So these are not extraterrestrial beings.
That's right.
Now, a racist hate group. Well, you know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that if he's to be called a racist, there's a positive aspect to that. He said, as a person who becomes a master violin in the playing of a violin, you call him a violinist, a person who has mastered the study and science of physics. You would call him a physicist, a person studying and demonstrating some degree of mastery of biology or chemistry. You would call that person a biologist or a chemist. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan so loves his people and so has mastered the saving message of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in its, or the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in its ability to resurrect the black man out of the condition that 400 years of slavery has rendered him, then when you call him a racist, I guess on that sense you are right. But a racist with a hateful or hate connotation, you are absolutely wrong. Now, in my concluding words, I want to define this word hate. It is defined in the dictionary as to dislike intensely or passionately, to feel extreme aversion for or extreme hostility towards, detest, to hate the enemy, to hate bigotry, to be unwilling, dislike, as in I hate to do, to feel intense dislike or aversion or hostility. Now, keep those definitions in mind. 450 years ago, our fathers were kidnapped from their native land and people and forcibly put into ships and brought 9,000 miles from their native land and deposited on the shores of America and subsequently subjected to the worst troop treatment any human beings have ever suffered in the annals of history. Made to work 310 years without the slightest bit of compensation. Hung on trees, backs whipped, black women raped, children killed and tortured, hung from trees. And even after the so-called hypocritical emancipation proclamation, even after that time, blacks were still, by way of the institution and enforcement of Jim Crow laws, still in a form of slavery. I want to read something to you from the book, Volume 2, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. On page 18 in the second paragraph, we read, in fact, blacks were the only population that had the knowledge, the experience, the skills, and the demonstrated industry to perform these critical tasks, meaning carpentry, masonry, and the like. But after 310 years of unpaid and appreciated toil, they had their own ideas about what to do with their invaluable labor. Despite black people's vision of their future as free American citizens, white elites enacted specific policies in every sector of society that, in effect, would rebuild the slave system and return the African to servitude. On a massive scale, they attempted to dispossess blacks of the notion that they had any rights in America save the right to work for a white man. Now, Jews will say, well, we were not a part of that. Well, let me read to you on page 17. This is a business advertisement, and it reads as follows. Negroes, Negroes, the undersigned has just arrived in Lumpkin from Virginia with a likely lot of new Negroes, about 40 in number, embracing every shade and variety. He has seamstresses, chambermaids, field hands, and doubts not that he is able to fill the bill of any who may want to buy. He has sold over 200 Negroes in this section, mostly in this country, and flatters himself that he has no so far given satisfaction to his purchases. Being a regular trader now, to this market, he has nothing to gain by misrepresentation and will therefore warrant every Negro soul to come up to the bill squarely and completely. Give him a call at his mart. Who is the he and who is himself? It is none other than J.F. Moses, a Jew in Lumpkin, Georgia, November 14th, 59. I want to read something else from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's installment, 20th installment of the lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done. In 1992, Rob Reiner, a comedian and actor, said, Hollywood is all run by Jews. Neil Gabler said that 3 out of every 5 of the Hollywood elite are Jews. Dalton Trumbull testified before the House Un-American Activities Committee in 1946, saying Hollywood made tots of the Negro's daughters, crapshooters of his sons, obsequious Uncle Toms of his father, superstitious and grotesque clones of his mothers, strutting peacocks of his successful men, song-singing mountebanks of his priests, and Bonham and Bailey sideshows of his religion. Now these are Jews who have inflicted and subjected our people to this kind of serious and severe misrepresentation, belittling us to such a degree that it has caused us in modern times to look at one another as if, and treat one another as if we're nothing at all. We wonder why blacks are not united. We wonder why we can't work together. We wonder why our young people are slaughtering each other in the streets. Inherently and as a result of the racist indoctrination of white supremacy and black inferiority, which the Jews are the architects of in America and throughout the world. This is the reason why we are in the conditions. Now, in contrast, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam had been working for 83 years in the black community. As a result of that work, we have taken the locked out, the lost, the forlorn, the disenfranchised, the lazy, the slothful, the drug addict, the wino, the prostitute, and reformed them with a word of teaching from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, directly from God, who appeared in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, and then through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for the last 40 years, in fact, nearly 60 years of his life, he delivered that word and raised up the so-called Negro to a level of respect, gave him honor and pride and love and self-esteem. Now you contrast the actions of both Farrakhan and the Nation and whites, especially Jews. Will the real hater please stand up?
Oh,
that's
wow.
What we're asking.
Right.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to stop right there with respect to those who need time. May Allah bless you. I hope that you are listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa'alaikum salam. Thank you, Brother James. That was absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Okay. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Okay, I think next we have on the list to speak to us is Brother Walter Muhammad. And you are going to speak to us about the comments from John Henry Clark, that he derogatory comments that, of course, that he made about the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan. So if you would, sir.
Yes, ma'am. I want to start in the name of Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad. I believe that there's no God but Allah, and I believe that Muhammad is his messenger. I also believe that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder in our midst today. I'd like to greet everyone in the greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum
salam. Salam, sir.
It seems, or it appears, after approximately 20 years, after the advent of the internet, and approximately or close to 20 years after the convening of the Million Man March, John Henry Clark's comments concerning the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has become an internet sensation. What I would like to do is deconstruct what the brother said and let everyone know that the enemy will always use our own people who are even deceased to come against the man of Almighty God Allah, and that is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. They have not found a man alive today that can deal with this man. I'm talking about a black man. Now, no white man will touch him. They can't say anything about this man.
Right.
But they have to get our people to do so. But the only ones that they can have any type of success, even though it is futile, is they use literally the carcass of our own people to use against our man in our midst. What I do not understand is that the so-called black conscious community appears to be somewhat hypocritical when it comes to our dear departed brother, Malcolm X. They have this idea or this romanticism with the life of Malcolm, but they fail to live up to Malcolm. But they want the cheerleading of Malcolm. And so does our brother John Henry Clark, who is a historian, an academician. What he did or said in this clip concerning the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was basically about the Million Man March. When you listen to the brother's comments, you can tell that he's very bitter about the death of Malcolm X, and he blames the Nation of Islam and even Minister Farrakhan for the death of Malcolm.
That's right.
He critiques the Million Man March about the money and the no accounting. We already disproved that. That's a lie. He is the architect of that, I believe, because now you have this mantra today on over the internet that there was no accounting of the money. Where are they getting these lies from? They're getting it from that clip from Dr. John Henry Clark. They want to question the minister and the Nation of Islam concerning the execution of Malcolm. They blame the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. If that was the case, then why don't they open up the files concerning the death of our brother?
Come on.
Right.
Why don't they open the files if Minister Farrakhan is guilty of killing him? Huh? Why not?
Right.
Because
right.
You know you're responsible for doing it. And I am shocked. I am surprised that someone as educated and intelligent as Dr. John Henry Clark could not see that it was our common enemy that had something to do or everything to do with the demise of our brother Malcolm X.
That's right.
Then they complained about there were no women at the march. And there was no context. There was no goal concerning the march. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that he looked at the suffering of our women and he wanted to bring the men together so that we can take an oath to go back into our communities and take the responsibility of our women and our girls, take the responsibility
right.
of our children and our communities. So you can't blame the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for what you would deem a failure. No, the failure is on us, not on the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. The next thing you will start complaining is that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan did not flush the toilet behind you.
Right.
It is allowed to do the work. How in the hell can a man in his 80s do everything?
Right.
He can't do everything. But check this out. I just addressed the minor details. I really want to address a statement, a lie, which I believe that our dear departed brother, Dr. John Henry Clark, knew was a lie, and that's the lie that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that our features, our hair, our dark skin, the thickness of our lips and the broadness of our noses is a curse. He did not elaborate.
Right.
He took it out of context.
Yes,
that's another internet sensation now. of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan talking about our trials and tribulations in Central Africa 50,000 years ago on up until now. I want to go into detail on that, but first I want to deconstruct our brother to let all of those people in the black conscious community know that our dead brother was not infallible. He was not perfect. Matter of fact, I will dare say with confidence that our dear, I mean, this brother is sharp, our scholarly brother, our academic, Demetian, Dr. Wesley Muhammad, has debunked the writings or a segment of the writings of our brother William Chancellor and our brother John Henry Clark.
Right.
I'm going to read something that our brother wrote concerning him debunking this idea that Islam was the reason that we were enslaved. Give me a second.
Go ahead, soldier.
He says the prophet Drew Ali more thoroughly, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, succeeded in completely indigenizing Islam among blacks in America. Elijah's call to blacks to accept Islam was articulated thusly: accept your own, which is Islam, and be yourself a Muslim. As a result of this success, for a long time, Islam was understood to be an organic part of the black cultural identity. Early Afrocentric scholarship added an air of academic legitimacy to the organic relationship between Islam and blackness by rightly pointing out that Prophet Muhammad of Arabia was black, a claim made also by Elijah Muhammad. However, this convergence of the claims of black Muslims and Afrocentric scholarship gave way in the 1970s to a radical divergence, a process that was, for all intents and purposes, initiated by the 1974 publication of Dr. Chancellor Williams' seminal work, The Destruction of Black Civilization. Dr. Williams stressed the historical role of Islam and Arabs, whom he misidentified as whites or Caucasians, in the process of the enslavement of Africans and the overall destruction of black civilization. It can be safely said that since its publication, the destruction defined and continues to define the Afrocentric perspective on Islam and its relation to the black world. The destruction initiated, in the words of sociologist Yusuf Nuruddin, the Afrocentric crusade against Islam, including the black American Islam, including Black American Islam, Nuruddin, year 2000. Hakim Adabuti, whose Third World Press obtained publishing rights to the work, suggested in his own book, Enemies, The Clash of Races, 1978, that Islam was part of a global white supremacist ideology. Professor Malifi Asante, who coined the term Afrocentricity and defined its parameters in 1980, proclaimed that Islam was in fact contradictory to Afrocentricity. But it was certainly the late Dr. John Henry Clark who most successfully continued Chancellor Williams' approach to the subject and has become the voice of the Afrocentric crusaders against Islam. The public discussion of Islam's historical relationship Africa and African people initiated by the publication of Williams' destruction has thrown important light on the issue of race, racism, and slavery in the Muslim world. Indeed, following the conversion letter, which Malcolm X El Haj Malik El Shabazz sent back from Mecca in 1964, a particular myth has gained currency according to which the world of European Christianity and Arab Islam differed in that the latter was free of the racial preoccupations and anti-black racism characteristic of the former. However, this post-1974 Afrocentric scholarship, in agreement with some Western studies on Islam, has completely busted this myth. The East African
slave trade in the hands of Muslims is shown to have preceded the European transatlantic slave trade and to have been no less deleterious to the continent. Black or African-American Muslims can now romanticize about Islam only by remaining ignorant of the indifferent to these facts. In this regard, the Afrocentric critique of Islam has made a very important and positive contribution to the public discourse on Islam in Africa. So right there, that short couple of paragraphs shows you that Dr. Wesley Muhammad has thrown a monkey wrench in the anger and disgust that our dear brother John Henry Clark have against Islam, in particular the Nation of Islam, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Now, it's interesting, and I have to say, and I have to admit, with all due respect to our scholar, John Henry Clark, kind of hypocritical that he would criticize Islam in that way. Did he do that in the presence of Malcolm X, or would he have if Malcolm was still alive? Will he call the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan a racist against his own people concerning the concerning our sojourn in Africa for the past 50,000 years? What about Malcolm X's name, Shabazz, that he took on, a name that was to be given to him by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan? Where did that name come from? You don't find it supposedly in Arabic, but according to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and to some scholars, that name means indestructible. And some people say it means a mighty and noble people. What's interesting about the 24 scientists, which the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, or those that don't know, that's the 24 elders, is that they have the ability to predict the future 25,000 years in advance. So it's very interesting that the name Shabazz will fit him and the people he would take into the jungles of Africa. According to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he went to his, what I would say, colleagues or his fellow scientists with an idea to make us as a people one with nature, because he studied the planet and studied the moon and saw that we were able to survive the blast of the moon from one of our scientists 66 trillion years ago. And he wanted to make us one with nature. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that this was one of the smartest scientists of the time, and that he could see down the wheel of time that we would go through some type of trouble where we would need to go through the rigors of a jungle life. Am I correct, brothers and sisters?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Praise be to Allah. Now, the scientists didn't say no. They just said, you can't do it here. You got to do that on your own. This is according to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And Malcolm X believed that if he did not believe it, he would not have taken the name Shabazz, our father. All right? Let's get that out of the way.
Sir?
Right.
Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that Shabazz took his own family into the jungles of Central and South Africa. And he wanted us to become one with the rough and rugged environment. The air there is quite humid and hot. He wanted the environment to be the influence over us, like the terrain. He wanted the terrain to influence our physical persons, to withstand the rigors of the trials and tribulations possibly foreseen by Shabazz, our sojourn of 400 years here under servitude, chattel slavery. Now, we had to master and coexist with the jungles of Central Africa, the animal life there. Now, here we're closer to the sun due to the fact we were now on the equator. We had to battle diseases and the thick air, the heat, and the sun along with the animals. Now, to become one with the environment or a jungle environment is not to become civilized. It is indeed to be more like the jungle or wilderness, which is absolute rebellion to the Lord of the worlds, who we served prior to our entry into the jungle. But as time went on, though we were still God-centered with respect to knowing there was a supreme being, becoming one with the wilderness takes away from our civilization and refinement as human beings. Now, over time, tribalism set in. Over time, differences in dialect set in due to the differences in the density of the atmosphere. Now, over time, due to the atmosphere, our noses became broader.
Right.
The humidity over time caused our hair to kink up. Closeness to the sun, due to the fact we were on the equator, darkened our skin.
Right.
Now, if you look and study the book of Dr. Wesley Muhammad, I can't say more, you know, too much about this brother. Black Arabia and the African Origin of Islam. He gives you different phenotypes of black people worldwide. You have the phenotype, the sharp nose, the thin lips, the brown skin, and the straight hair. You
right.
find tribes of black people in New Zealand. You'll find tribes of black people in Australia. You'll find tribes of black people called the Dravidians in India. All of these tribes have straight hair, but only the ones that are in the diaspora of Africa have the kinky hair. Why? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that if you look at your eyebrows, you'll see what your hair once looked like. That is not far-fetched. That is not hard to believe. But maybe if a white man told you, you would believe it. But because a black man taught us that, you have a problem with that. That is not far-fetched.
Right.
At all. Now, Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that it would take from the God state that we were at, 50,000 years to fall from God to nigger.
Right.
What is so hard to believe about that? We built the mothership. We built planes. We brought up mountains. We created the insects. We created the animals.
That's right.
Is that so hard to believe? Or do a white man have to validate what we say? What is the problem with that? You don't know how to do research, or do you have a problem with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan? Now, we learned in our sojourn in Africa to become one with the wilderness or to become wild, but we did not learn to become one with the one that created the wilderness. This will definitely lead to rebellion against God. Eventually, and check this out, we got to keep it real. We have to keep it real. Eventually, we forgot how to read. We forgot how to write. We forgot science. We forgot the math. Some even forgot how to cook their food and how to clothe themselves, how to bathe. That's the truth. When you rebel like that against God, you're not going to look your best. We don't look the best over there. We're rough, rugged-looking people because the rebellion against God shows on our person. Now, though you'll find wonderful architecture in parts of Central and South Africa built by us, our last great wonder was the pyramids, which were built 50 to 10,000 years ago. We fell into utter ignominy compared to where we once were before. That's a 50,000-year decline from absolute gods to painting our faces, mutilating our bodies, tattooing our bodies, bones in our noses, plates in our lips. Some of us have body piercings. We lengthened our necks and molded our heads and to be oblong, and this leads, the rebellion leads to a curse. So now we're marked. So when we go out into the world, we're mocked, ridiculed, and scorned because they know us to be a rebellious people.
Right.
They see the kinky hair, they see a sign of rebellion. They see the differences in the different tribes and that our hair, we just was marked. And it's in Scripture, if you understand.
Right.
We have to get out of this romanticism of our African heritage, and let's keep it real.
Yes, sir. And Brother Walter, I don't want to cut you off, but we still got so many people to speak, and I really love what you're saying, but I want to get everybody an opportunity. But thank you, because you have really cleared that up, and I pray that the people got the message of what Minister Farrakhan was saying, and you have done such extensive research to bring that information to us. So we just don't have to have you back on a Black History Show or something like that, so you can break that down for the people again. So all praises due to Allah, Brother Walter. Thank you
so much.
And we don't.
I was about to end anyway. Thank you. That was it.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Okay, Brother, we're going to take Brother Daniel, and then we're going to check for questions. So, Brother Daniel, you're going to take on the Anti-Defamation League.
Yes, ma'am. Bismillah Rahman Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, to whom praises are due forever. I bear witness that he brought a man in our midst, a divine leader, teacher, and guide, that Georgia-born black man, the Messiah and the Exalted Christ, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I also further bear witness that he brought another man in our midst, a divine warner, reminder, and comforter in our midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I greet you in the peace of words in paradise in Arabic language. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
I have two things I want to go into. I want to make a point before I go into this. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said this in Savior's Day 1995, Jesus Saved. He said in the year 1913, he said the FBI started, and he also said the IRS and the Anti-Defamation League. Was that a coincidence, or was that by design? As I go into some points of the Anti-Defamation League, I'm going to a book by the EIR called The Ugly Truth About the ADL. I'm going to a section called Pending Slavery Today. It says, fast forward to 1992, in the nation's capital, where B'nai B'rith lawyer Simon Wolf, conspired on behalf of the Southern slave trade. The streets in many parts of the town are dominated by now drug traffickers whose deadly poison has inflicted both a subculture of addiction and violence, and a spread of the AIDS virus among predominantly black population. Community-based efforts led by the Nation of Islam have begin to roll back that new subculture of slavery and despair, restoring safety and dignity to some of the most desperately poor neighborhoods in the United States. True to its history, the B'nai B'rith intercedes to turn back the clock to the days of slavery. First, the ADL set off a massive wave of anger and resentment in the African-American community when, in June 1992, it published the Anti-Semitism of Black Demagogues and Extremists. The widely circulated ADL reported is a frontal attack on the Nation of Islam and its leader, Minister Louis Farrakhan. It openly threatened retribution against any elected officials or political activists who associate with or publicly commended the Nation of Islam. In 9th July, 1992, a major uproar developed in Washington, D.C. when the ADL was caught red-handed in an ugly attempt to shut down government contract with what has been the only effective effort to clean up drug and crime-infested areas in the nation's capital, the Nation of Islam, now famous Dope Busters. When Washington, D.C. Mayor Sharon Pratt Kelly issued an official proclamation honoring Nation of Islam Minister Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad for his leadership in the Dope Busters campaign and for his groundbreaking work in the AIDS treating AIDS patients with Emiviron, an African developed anti-AIDS drug, the ADL went crazy. Kelly repeatedly hit the Anti-Defamation League with delegations demanding that the protection be rescinded, lest she too be identified as an anti-Semite. When she refused, the Anti-Defamation League engaged in a national barrage of media attacks against the Nation of Islam. The attack culminated in an article run in the Washington Times, co-authored by the ADL National Director A. Foxman, fact-finding director Myra Lansky Boland. Ultimately, Kelly succumbed to ADL's demands, issued an open letter to the community in which she continued to praise Dr. Muhammad, workers against drugs and violence and AIDS and the AIDS virus, but condemned alleged anti-Semitic statements attributed to him by the ADL. But what was really in the heart of the Washington Times article, which was otherwise a potpourri of outrageous and unsubstantiated charges against the Nation of Islam, was demanded that Congress defeat the major appropriations bill for the Department of Housing and Urban Development over the question of whether HUD rules should permit a HUD contractor to hire dope busters to provide security for fairly subsidized housing project in Los Angeles. The Anti-Defamation League was particularly upset about the national attention the successful Dope Busters drug eradication program was getting. The Dope Busters was founded in Washington, D.C. in 1988. Since the unarmed Dope Busters patrol have been able to eradicate drug trafficking at the street level in 9 Washington ghetto neighborhoods and private housing projects, they have done so with no deaths and very little violence. Exemplary of the success of the program is the Mayfair Mansions housing complex in Northeast Washington. Mayfair Mansions went from ugly, unsafe, open-air drug market in 1988 to begin being handsomely restored, safe, vibrant community as a result of Dope Busters patrol. When HUD Secretary Jack Kemp visited Mayfair Mansions earlier this year, he admitted that the Nation of Islam deserved the credit and indicated that he was open to granting the patrol's federal government contracts. Tenants in public and private housing projects from New York to Baltimore to Los Angeles are demanding Dope Buster patrols. In most cases, the idea has the support of local police, government agencies who have failed to find any other effective way to curtail intensifying pattern of drug trafficking and violence. In almost every case, the ADL attempt to block tenants from choice of security force, tenant leaders who refuse to back down, has been subjected to threats, harassments, break-ins, and other forms of intimidation. This time, however, the ADL have committed fatal error in launching such an open attack, open and vicious attack on the Nation of Islam. Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad is not only one leader of the Nation of Islam, he is the most respected community leaders in the Washington area, and his pioneer work against AIDS and is gaining him international recognition. The black and Hispanic communities in the U.S. disproportionately infected by the deadly virus, but have almost no access to the accepted treatment, which consists prohibitively expensive, highly toxic AZC, DDI, or DDC. Dr. Muhammad and New York physician Dr. Barbara Justice have reported dramatic success treating more than 600 patients who are HIV positive with Imuviron, the drug that they brought back from Kenya. The pair is also credited with bringing vital information concerning this new treatment moderately to both the general public and the medical profession, taking the point of in a courageous effort to avert what would otherwise be the worst Holocaust to hit the human race. Similarly, the ADL charges, the dope busters, carry little credibility and leave the ADL completely exposed and nothing more than protection racket for the drug cartel. The dope busters enjoy the intense support of the communities they serve and have unprecedented record of success. Whenever they go, the dope busters convey an unmistakable message of hope and inspiration to the community that the war on drugs can be won. Interviews with residents of the community served by the dope busters make clear that they believe that is the message, nothing else, that has made the Nation of Islam and the dope busters a target of ADL attack. In a community where twin plagues of drug addiction and AIDS are the most vestige of slavery, the ADL has shown that despite the passage of time, its true loyalties lie with the slave masters. Now, going into some excerpts from Time What Must Be Done, Part 20, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said on Time What Must Be Done, Part 19 and 20, did I not say a few broadcasts ago that it is written in the scriptures that the hyenas and the jackals, the owls and the wild goats are in a palatial building of this Western world? And to the three of you, Mr. Abraham Foxham, Mark Potuk, Mr. Harold David Brackham, author of the book Jew on the Brae, A Public Refutation of Nation of Islam, The Secret Relationships Between Blacks and Jews. Your very weak answer to what we're saying only shows you that no arguments to defeat the truth. So the only thing that you have is your power to misuse and to mislabel through your power with the media, your power with black leadership, your power with black intellectuals, your power with black sports and entertainment figures. I want to say this. During the time of the dope busters who were successful in the black community, in the housing projects, also in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and also Chicago, Illinois, Abraham Foxham was the chief one that raised hell to get us out of here. But also, the second one who was behind that, who was very accountable for to remove the dope busters, was Mr. Peter King. When people back then at that time said when we were removed, death crept in the neighborhood. Young men and young women was killed left and right. And people was saying, we want the Muslims back. But going into the theology, the Time What Must Be Done lecture series, when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, referring to the black intellectuals and the black entertainments and black leaders, because you all who bow down to pressure from the Anti-Defamation League not to have anything what to do with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan nor the Nation of Islam. You put fear in us, just like when it said in our lessons. They put fear in us when we were babies. So therefore, I'm in Chicago. We don't have that many housing projects like it was in the past. I can bear witness that the FOI were in Ogden Courts and Rockwell Gardens. And it was a painful shame that we had to be removed, all account of the Anti-Defamation League and Mr. Peter King. But he gave hell to another fellow who praised us being there when the minister discussing the lecture, I'll be the winner living or dead, Mr. Harry Cisneros. And we got praised as the FOI being in the community to shut drug trafficking and violence so our babies can play. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, Brother Daniel. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome,
wow.
Sister Bishop.
Okay. I'm going to check for questions before we move on. So are there any questions on the line, DJ Black Caesar?
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right. We're going to move on because I know the chat room is full. So let me remind them that
yes, ma'am.
If you have questions for you all who are in the chat room, please type in your question. DJ Black Caesar will ask the question on your behalf. For those of you who are calling by phone, press 1 on your dial pad, and we will take your question. Okay, we're going to hear from Brother Victor first and then Brother Clyde. Brother Victor, can you share with us what in the world went on in Detroit when the minister was there and what happened with him and John Conyers, if anything, and what do you think made John Conyers come out, U.S. Representative John Conyers, come out and denounce the minister?
Okay. As-salamu alaykum, dear family.
Wa alaykum salam.
Wa alaykum salam, sir.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that none is deserving of praise and worship, but Allah, who came to us in the person of Master Farad Muhammad. And in the name of His Exalted Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And then our leader, teacher, guide, comfort, mercy, torchlight in the darkness of America, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I greet you in their names. In the greeting words of peace. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa
alaykum salam.
Well, sister, the minister delivered a historic message to a sin-sick city such as Detroit, which the whole world has called destroyed. But the thing is he brought a message that only God could give to his man, because you've had lawyers and accountants and this politician, that religious leader, and everyone speak to the ills of Detroit, and no one has had the answer until God's man comes with the message that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan delivered. There was no doubt in the minds of those who heard without influence. The minister's message was divinely given. And just to give some insight to who Representative John Conyers is, to those who don't know, John Conyers is he's the second oldest member of the House of Representatives. He's been in office for 48 years. He's 84 years old. He's the founder of the Congressional Black Caucus. He's the dean of that. He's also was the organizer of the Martin Luther King holiday, being a national holiday, and he has done so much work on behalf of black people in the country. That's why it has come as such a shock. And let's just add this as well. He is a quote-unquote friend of the minister. He has dined at the palace. He has attended many Savior's Day programs with us.
That's
he has sat on the dais with us
on many occasions, he has dined with the minister. He knows the minister's not a hater and not a homophobe or an anti-Semite. He knows these things, but the power of the slave master to use his whip on his slaves can change someone who has stood up for black people and make him dirty his knees begging for forgiveness from his wicked slave master.
Right.
You can see when you get this video of the minister speaking at Fellowship Chapel, he personally turned and called John Conyers out and acknowledged his presence and thanked him for coming. John Conyers stood up, graciously bowed, and he could be seen throughout the tape, bearing witness to, first of all, I was on the stage with him. And Brother Clyde, who's also on the line, could verify, we were all on the stage with John Conyers. John Conyers was bearing witness. He was agreeing with words the minister said. And then I stood there as he gave an interview to our brother, Ashay Muhammad, when he said this, and I quote, "This was a historical occasion in terms of how we pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and really start putting the city and our minds together for moving forward." That was, quote, in the Final Call newspaper, quoted by John Conyers. Now, the ADL, which stands for the Already Dead League, stood up and said, and they pinpointed in their work, they pinpointed John Conyers and Councilwoman Joanne Watson, among other prominent city leaders that stood and invoked, listen to this hate and this anti-Semitism and all this. They pinpointed them on Wednesday. The minister spoke on the 17th. On the 23rd, the ADL came out stating that their good Negroes and slaves should repudiate the minister. And they pinpointed John Conyers and Sister Joanne Watson. Sister Joanne Watson failed to respond to them. But less than 24 hours after they issued their admonishment, John Conyers came out and he said these words. Let me get to that. Let me see exactly what he said. Please excuse me. Here's what he said. "During his speech, Minister Farrakhan made unacceptable racist, anti-Semitic, and homophobic statements, which I condemn in the strongest possible terms. It was my expectation that Minister Farrakhan's speech would focus on the many challenges facing the city of Detroit. In previous days, he had discussed efforts to revitalize our city by purchasing property and investing in blighted neighborhoods. Regrettably, he used this opportunity to promote views that have no place in civilized discourse." Now, I find that, and then he said, "The fact that Minister Farrakhan has engaged in important charitable work aimed at expanding economic opportunities for underserved communities does not excuse these statements. I sincerely offer my apologies to my constituents and others who may have been offended by the minister's words." Who are you, John Conyers, to apologize for a God's man in your midst? First of all, what happened between the 17th when you gave your interview that I personally witnessed and heard, and then the 24th when your slave master whipped you on your backside with the whip of anti-Semitism and fear, and you bowed down and dirtied up your knees and started turning on your friend, turned with words on your friend, and you came out with this? If it was so offensive, John Conyers, why didn't you walk out? Why didn't you stand up and protest? Why didn't you leave at that point in time? And why did it take you 7 days to become so offended? Because are you so absent-minded that you couldn't remember you was offended until your white slave master told you you were?
Right.
The fact of the matter is this. You know good darn well that the minister did not do such a thing. You know him not to be a homophobe. It ain't Minister Farrakhan who invented the fact that a man shouldn't be with a man or a woman shouldn't be with a woman. That's written in the Bible.
Come on.
That's right.
So if you want to serve, you're going to serve God. Don't sit up there and be an apologist to Satan and his devils. Because, like you said, when the man of perdition is revealed, his job is to stay covered. And he would use the truth and dismiss it as hate cheating so he can go back into hiding and continue his mischief. You were just upset that the minister pulled the cover off of that, and then pulling off the cover, you didn't know that your backside would be exposed to. Because the bottom line is you are slaying underneath the cover of white supremacy 84 years in your life. At the twilight of your congressional service, you are still a Negro, a shine, a colored boy, a slave. You are still the tool used by your master to keep your people separate. You should be in the twilight of your career going out on a strong note, but you were going out with a whimper. You punk. You were just sitting around trying to wait for your slave man. Then guess what the slave master did to him? Told him that his repudiation was not good enough. You can't go back to the people you betrayed, nor can you go back to the slave master that you thought you seek to please. He told you it wasn't enough. You shouldn't even have been there. You're an 84-year-old grown man, and you got other people telling you where you can go, what you can do, when to clap your hands, when to stand up, when to sit down, probably even tell you when to go to the toilet. But the bottom line is this. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan spoke nothing but the truth. And if what he said was false, then your truth should be able to dispel his falsehood, and then we only have a discussion. But you know, you are going to use the words of the already dead league, and what they said was, their representative said, although we acknowledge the significant challenges that Detroit faces, providing a platform to an individual with a long history of promoting anti-Semitism and racism is not the solution. It disappoints me that so many Detroit leaders are apparently so willing to turn a blind eye to Farrakhan's anti-Semitism. Where are the voices in our community, and who are willing to stand up and say no to racism and anti-Semitism? If you always notice in their statement, they always ask, where are the voices? Where are my niggas? Where are my servants?
Come on,
where are they at? For me. And here's what else they said. He said, at the later venue, ADL officials said, they didn't quote the minister direct. You got the transcript. You know what he said. They said he said, Farrakhan spewed hateful anti-Semitic invective, referring to satanic Jews and the synagogue of Satan, supposedly controlling major institutions. If you saw the title of What Must Be Done, Part 20, the minister backed up every word he said with showing that they were the orchestrators of Hollywood, that they are the orchestrators of the porn industry, that they are the orchestrator of the banking system, that they have done everything to bring down the moral fiber of this country, and then they do it and hide behind us the shadow of saying Semitism. Okay, so he's an anti-Semite. What is a Semite? They said that Semite is anyone who speaks the Semitic language. What is the Semitic language? When Jews are speakers of Yiddish, which is a form of German, they never spoke the Semitic language. There's someone who said, I don't know who the quote is, he said, anti-Semitism used to be when you didn't like Jews, but now anti-Semitism is when the Jews don't like you. So they're doing now is because there is not one man walking the planet Earth, because God will not send two saviors at one time. He sends only one, so you cannot be confused on the one he sent. And he sent to pull the covers off of the Jews, the satanic Jews, and the synagogue of Satan, and expose them to the world in what they've done in the transatlantic slave trade and the moral decline of American values. Name one instance where he has hurt a Jew. But you have used your mouth and your media and all of your outlets to defame the man of God. It is no different than the Jesus of your time. You called him that of fornication. And you want to take the Muslim man that is in our midst today and use your filth and your dirty tongue to sit there and disparage the one that God sent. You're going to pay your price, Anti-Defamation League. Hey, Foxman, I can't wait to dance upon your grave. But the bottom line is this. You will not get a chance to attack the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in the manner that you've done those in the past. You've put those leaders in the past in the grave. And that is only because Allah has allowed that to happen because they were not the chosen of him. They may have been a messenger of his, but they were not his chosen. That's why you cannot lay a hand on the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
That's
right.
And
we have to stand up. The minister, all he's got to do is prophesy to the winds. But when it comes to defending him, it should come from his ministers, his followers, and those who say they're with you. And I'm telling you right now, dear family, and every ear that's on this line, after hearing what you heard in part 20, you cannot be wishy-washy in who you follow. The minister has thrown the gauntlet down. He told you it's time for a showdown. And then when the showdown comes, that's when we got to stand up and we got to take our punishment. We got to bear our cross. The minister, it ain't no trial for the minister. It's a trial for those who follow it. When Jesus came through and they said, Hosanna, Hosanna, that's how we are, because it's easy to follow man in the cool of the night, but can you follow him in the heat of the day? But when he goes through the cross, there was only a handful. There was only one man and six women. Now, think about that. They had the God number there, but where were you, black man? There was more women there. So we have to stand up today, black man. So when our leader, teacher, and guide is going to have to go through the trial that is ordained for him and prophesied for him, will we be the ones that say, I don't know the man? Will we tell that we deny our association with him before the cock crows three times? Or will we be there to stand with him as he bears his cross and we bear ours to stand arm in arm with the man of God? It's so much easier to follow a dead Jesus or a dead Malcolm, but it's hard to follow a live, living follower of God, ordained by God to save our soul. It's never the people that he comes to save that's on the lookout for him. It's always the ones who seek his demise. So we have to see him in his proper light, and we must be there to defend him. John Conyers, you can serve 100 more sentences, but you've ended in disgrace. You're on your knees. You got little brown stuff around your nose. You're looking at it. But the bottom line is this. You can't be loved by them because you turned on your man. So I say that, dear family, as you can tell, I am very high spirit when it comes to my minister and your minister. Because I can tell you right now, like brother said earlier, I would not be here. I would just be one of those commercials that you, one of them news flashes when you say, dang, that nigga was crazy. When he did what he did. But I thank Almighty God Allah for giving me a father that I didn't have to lead me on the right path. And I look at the minister and I say, I cannot have a drop of blood that can't be shed in your name. I don't have a breath in my body that I cannot sacrifice in your name and for our nation. So I am a patriot of my nation. I am not going to allow anyone to talk disparaging about our leader, teacher, and guide. May Allah bless us all with understanding. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum
salam. Okay, Brother Victor. Woo. Brother Clyde, I know you were
excuse me, can I say one more thing? The minister said he was going to visit Kwame Kilpatrick during his lecture. We had set up an opportunity for him to visit Kwame at the Milan Correctional Facility. The man there had agreed to allow the minister in, said everything was there. When the minister spoke that from the rostrum at Fellowship Chapel Church, when we tried to get that taken care of the next morning, they denied that they had ever approved it. They denied that they ever seen it. See, that hidden devil's hand is very wicked.
That's right.
The man is already in prison. What harm can it be for this man to go into the prison and speak with that brother? But you just want to fall victim, and you don't know which hand made that call to Milan, but I know that it was a call made there. So they would not allow our beloved minister to visit our brother in prison.
That's right.
Lord have mercy. Okay, Brother Clyde, you want to share your experience with us that you witnessed when the minister was there?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It was in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness there is no God but Allah, Muhammad is his messenger. I greet all my brothers and sisters with the greeting words of peace of As-salamu alaykum.
Wa-alaykum salam, sir.
Brother Victor really covered everything because when we were there Friday night to hear the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan speak, it was electrifying. And if anybody do not have that DVD, I strongly encourage you to get it. I strongly encourage you to get it, because what's going on in the city of Detroit, believe me, brothers and sisters, is happening in your city right now. You know, it may not be as intense as it is here, but it's there. Anywhere you find black people at today, the same thing. It's a common thread throughout. And it's the same hidden hand that's orchestrating, the perpetrating the same crimes that's going on. It's the same hidden hand. But I just want to make a brief comment because Brother Victor did a beautiful job on explaining what happened. But I was looking at the article again myself, and Victor asked the question, why did he do that? And I believe it's right here in this article, and I'm going to read it if you don't mind. It's a very short article. It said, Farrakhan's anti-Semitic comment. Kanye, who attended Farrakhan's speech Friday night at Fellowship Chapel Church, issued a strong statement that distanced himself from the NOI leader's remarks. Now, this is the answer, which were blasted earlier during the week by a Jewish civil rights group.
That's right.
Why he did it. You know, because as Brother Victor said, we sat there and watched Conyers when he come in. We sat there and watched Conyers stand up. We sat there and watched Conyers clap his hands and bow. Victor witnessed him do an interview with the Final Call News. Everything he said was positive about the minister. What happened? It says here, which were blasted earlier by the weak Jewish civil rights group. Earlier during
That's
the week,
right.
they blasted it. Now, Kanye said Farrakhan made unacceptable racist, which Brother James did a beautiful job on that definition of racist. He said that he made unacceptable racist, anti-Semitic, homophobic statements, which I condemn in the strongest possible terms. Kanye said the minister's views have no place in civilized society. Now, when I read that, my mind immediately went to the words of Jesus when he was talking to the Jews, when he talked about, my word has no place in you. So if he want to substitute my word has no place in civilized society, we can easily substitute that with my word has no place in these supposedly fake, fraudulent, hypocritical Zionists posing as Jews. So to me, when he said that, it brings it home. So we understand why, you know, that they doing what they doing. Because if I was a liar, if I was a murderer, if I was a person who raped your mama and put my picture up on your wall as your savior, then somebody comes along and say, wait a minute, I'm exposing these characters today. And
right.
that's what the minister is doing throughout every time he comes before us on this latest.
I got to click over.
That he's doing on the radio every week. You know, he's exposing. And when you expose somebody, you shed light on hitting things. So if I was in the Jews' shoes, I would be mad as well. You know, but the Jews, to me, what they really did to our brother, John Conyers, who, like Victor said, is 84 years old. You know, he's old and frail, and he has to be basically helped around. The Jews manifested Conyers' character as being a weak Negro leader politician. And when you look up the word politician, it's one that has no scruples at all.
Right.
And the Conyers didn't expose it. The Jews exposed it.
Right.
You know, they exposed him for him trying to play both sides of the fence, in my opinion, because there's no way in the world that you should be able to get on the national news cycle like he did in every major newspaper and say the things that he said about the minister. It makes me wonder what kind of junk do they have on you. Are you on your way to jail?
Right.
You know, like your wife. You know, maybe they got something on you that's really made you do what you did. Then turn around, like Brother Victor said, and say, take your apology and shove it. That's how they played John Conyers. Take your apology and shove it. You know, they talked to the man as if he was 3 years old. You know, why are you going to hear Minister Farrakhan? Where are you at? Why don't you stand up? Where are my niggas at, basically, like my brother was saying. So, you know, it was a very, very, even what John Conyers said, you know, if you look at what the minister had to say to the city of Detroit,
on that day. The solution is there, and the solution is just not here. It's everywhere because you can take what he said and apply it wherever you are.
Yes, sir.
So I strongly suggest that we all get that and piece it apart. As-salamu alaykum.
And I can bear witness that the minister sat up there and solved all their problems in 33 minutes and 4 seconds.
That's right.
That's right. That's the whole thing. And another thing, whoever said that there were no women at the Million Man March, I tell you, you lying. I got permission from the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan to attend the Million Man March, and there were many MGT there. So that is also a falsehood. I was right there, front and center, October 16, 1995, with my pink 19 on.
Come on.
Okay. All right. Okay, we're going to hear from Brother, this brother here, Brother Jihad Ali. And he has decided to take on everybody.
He's going to take on
these other, I call them false Islamic groups. He's going to take on these so-called fake leaders. Some of them think that Minister Farrakhan is sitting in their seat. Brother Jihad's piece is very important because these men that he's going to speak on are taking our babies, our young people, and leading them astray. And these are the ones that you see on the internet that were not amongst us during the time of the messenger who have been misled about who Minister Farrakhan is and what he represents. So, without further ado, Brother Jihad Ali.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead, thank you, Queen. I would like to say, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness there's no God but Allah who appeared to us in person. That's Rah Muhammad, and Muhammad is his messenger. I would like to greet my family and the callers. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Wa alaykum salam, sir.
And I don't plan on being long, but I hope to be strong. I would like to say that regarding these groups who claim the name of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Master Farah Muhammad, I'm going to just say it flat out. They're a bunch of damn hypocritical, backstabbing snakes of the grafted type. Pure and simple. Because of the fact that they neglected, rejected, and then they had the nerve to also add venom on the name of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
That's right.
If you're listening, you followers of Royale and Silas and Marvin Muhammad, and even to you fake wannabe red, black, and green revolutionaries, you who spit on the name of Marcus Garvey and Malcolm X and Colin Muhammad and all who you want to claim who paved the way for all of us, you are making them roll in their damn graves with your ignorance and your devilishment.
Right.
It takes, you see, you nincompoops really think that just the white man is the only one being capable of being called the devil. Absolutely not.
Right.
Absolutely not.
That's right.
It takes a devil to come on any type of open forum in the public, knowing that the time and the hour that we are in, if you're going to spit on that man's name, did not the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad tell us everywhere he says go, stay from, etc.? But you got the nerve with your self-righteous hypocrisy to come on open forums or in the public, in the face of the enemy, and lie on that man and slander his name. How dare you? But then you hide like a bunch of church rats
on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube, hide your faces and make fake accounts because you're too afraid to step out and face a real man, a real FOI, or a real MGT, who are a lot more woman and show a lot more testosterone than you do.
Come on.
Y'all got some nerve.
That's right.
And then you got the nerve to say, yeah, when you know what I'm saying, Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, that's my man, that's my man. Okay, we all know the history of Dr. Khalid. But you see,
right,
if Dr. Khalid was your man, then you would go by some of his principles, which were some good principles, I have to say. He said, oppose what the enemy support and support what the enemy oppose. So therefore, how many of you Negroes are running around saying the same thing that the white man is saying regarding the minister?
Gee.
You claim to hate the devil, but you love and depend on Satan. You claim to hate the white man this and white man that, but you over here using the white man's or Satan's knowledge and Satan's slander, and you utilize it because you hate Farrakhan, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So you come on here and you say the same slander that they say. You sound just like Abraham Foxman. You sound just like the ADL. You sound like the damn Ku Klux Klan. They come up and they say all these things. Farrakhan thinks he went on the wheel. Farrakhan thinks that he had a vision-like experience. How many of you hypocrites mock the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's vision-like experience? I hear it all the time. Farrakhan think he went in the spaceship. You sound just like your own enemy, but you claim to hate the devil?
Right.
How many of you used when that article came out regarding Brother Supreme Captain, regarding him working for the police force? Here you come, running behind the white man like a slave. Here you come. Yeah, I knew it, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Nation of Islam being infiltrated by the police. Look at this, man. Look at this. Negro, please, that is no new information. But because Whitey put it on the newspaper, all of a sudden you think it's new, so you're going to take it and run with it with your red,
right,
black, and green wearing self.
Right.
Absolutely not. You say the same thing that he's saying. Oh, Farrakhan think he had 2 million people at the Million Man March. It was really 200,000. Here you come, on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter. Oh, yeah, yeah, see, Farrakhan taking on the money. It won't that many people at the march. Anyway, I was there. You lying Negro. You weren't there, and you're using the propaganda of the enemy because that's what you want to utilize, because in the truth and honesty, you love the white man. You love Satan, and you hate the minister, and you got the nerve to claim you love the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? Are you serious? When the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad slapped up and down, he slapped that white man crazy. The white man, the devil, the white man, the devil, the white man, the he wore him out.
That's right.
He wore Satan out. But you come back here with your sympathetic self and your apologist for the Caucasian and your apologist for Satan. You saying the same thing that the ADL is saying. You are no better than them. In fact, you are worse than them because you know better. Most of you been in the ranks. Most of you been in the mosque. Most of you was up there with the minister himself. But because you feel bitter, because you was done wrong in some way, shape, or form in the mosque, you now feel like you have to come against the nation. Like what the minister said in his Shock of the Hour lecture 1992, don't make that mistake. Don't make that mistake. You self-righteous hypocrites get on my nerves. You got the nerve to put the Honorable Elijah Muhammad on your red, black, and green patch alongside Malcolm, but yet you spit on Master Farah Muhammad calling him a devil? Are you serious? Who the hell you think you playing with?
Right.
The messenger didn't play that. You can't take one and reject the other because one is black and you don't understand the difference between black and white. The messenger said before that there will come a time where you see some white folks and you think they're really all white, but they're actually black. I'm paraphrasing.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't take one and reject the other. You can't take Elijah and reject Farrakhan because they're all one and the same. when the messenger told the minister to sit in my seat. What do you think he was saying, Marvin? You ain't no damn son of man. Quit fooling yourself.
Right.
That's right.
You ain't no damn son of man. Royale, your gap teeth having self. You got some nerd playing the master for Rama. I'm talking about he dead. Only thing that's dead is your mindset. It's Ed
right.
Muhammad. Let me get on you. You fake Dr. Khaled imitation. You will never be Dr. Khaled. You will never be Dr. Khaled. And you will never, ever, ever be Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You sitting in there talking to nobody but thin air on your YouTube clips. You sitting in there talking about talk about AK-47s and nonsense like that. But then you got the nerd to come back and say, that's not the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but I just said it. But you mock Farrakhan. There's a video of this fool on YouTube. He's talking all this talk. Why was my minister Farrakhan sending the FOI in Chicago right now? He's talking, though, but the person put in the video, the minister hitting door to door, working, working.
That's right.
Working.
That's right.
While he's talking on stage. And that's what they do on Facebook. Bunch of damn keyboard killers, gigabyte gangsters, and World Wide Web warriors. That's all you are. You just talk. That's all you do.
Come on,
Black. On Facebook talking about, Farrakhan. Where's our nation at, Farrakhan? Guess what? In the Million Man March, the minister said, then he said, say your name. Not his name,
come on.
Your name.
Come
right.
On,
that's right. That's right.
I'm not
going
to sit there to question the minister where your nation at. Well, that man been on the battlefield while you were still stuck in your mama's infected womb. You got some nerve.
Don't
you ever question the minister about where your nation at. Where your nation at? How come you didn't stand up in 1975 or 1976 or 77 to resurrect the nation? How come you didn't do that? Where's your businesses? Where's your money at? Where's your homes? Where's your hospitals? Where's all that at? You
right.
went to the Million Man March because it was your responsibility, not his responsibility. He made the call. You have to put in the work, but you too busy playing Xbox 360 and sitting on your fat ass and eating Cheetos 24/7, claiming you a Muslim, claiming you a damn revolutionary, when you're nothing but the white man's nigga.
T.
That's all I got to say, family.
Salaam
alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam. Brother Jahad, you all right? My goodness. Okay. Hold on a minute. DJ Black Cleaver, let's see if we're going to take some questions. Let's see if we have any questions before we bring Brother Maurice on. I think we had a question from area code 704. I'm not sure. DJ Black Caesar, are you there? Oh, he probably got his phone on me.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm here. I don't see a 704, but I got 248. Your phone line is open. You want to make a comment or ask a question?
Okay, maybe not. Okay, we're running out of time, but we got to hear from Brother Maurice. Brother Maurice.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, come on, take us home.
Yeah. I would like to talk about the number one T3 organization and understanding what they're doing and how they're trying to stop the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in our mission. And I'm just going to name a few of them. We have a group called ACORN. It was the Association of Community Organizing for Reform Now. It was the nation's largest community organization for low and moderate income families. Basically, it was a white organization started by white people to quote-unquote fix the problems of black people. And they had organizations throughout the U.S. They had chapters throughout the U.S. They had chapters in the Dominican Republic and Peru. Then you had another organization called SOCOM, Statewide Organizing for Community Empowerment, who worked for social justice, social, economic, environmental justice concerns. And whenever you hear the word social justice and economic justice, then they're talking about black people issues. Now, these organizations get big money to so-called work on black issues. You have the NAACP, where their mission is to ensure political, education, social, and economic equality for the rights of all persons and to eliminate race-based discrimination. You have the Urban League, and their mission is to enable African Americans to secure economic and self-reliance, parity, power, and civil rights. You have the National Action Network, done by Reverend Al Sharpton, and their thing is in the tradition of Martin Luther King Jr. to promote modern civil rights agenda, which includes to fight for one another, to stand for justice, decency, equal opportunities for all people regardless of race, religion, nationality, or gender. You also have the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and they're renewing their commitment to bring about the promise of one nation under God, indivisible, together, with a commitment to activate the strength to love within the community of humankind. You also have the National Black United Federation of Charities, which is a federation of 28 nonprofits that help the black community in the United States and in Africa. And they go out and they work for to try to have you get better education, a better job opportunity, equal opportunity, economic development, environmental justice, and social justice. For all of these programs and all of these other institutions are out here fighting for the hearts and minds of our people to remove them from the mission, the goal set by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and what Minister Farrakhan is bringing into fruition. And the United States government did a report called the Report on the Negro Family. And I'm going to read some things out of this report, and I want us to realize exactly what they're saying and then look at your present condition. And when this thing starts to speak to you, then, you know, let us know that you can relate to exactly what's going on. It says, in the decade that began with the school desegregation decision of the Supreme Court and ended with the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the demand of a Negro American for full recognition of their civil rights was finally met. The present moment will pass. In the meantime, a new period is beginning. In this new period, the expectations of the American Negro will go beyond civil rights. Being Americans, they will now expect that in the near future, equal opportunities for them as a group will produce roughly equal results as compared with other groups. This is not going to happen, nor will it happen for generations to come unless a new special effort is made. They changed from the freedom movement to the civil rights movement so that white folks can understand what they wanted. So they dropped total freedom for civil rights from the enemy, and the enemy saying that is not going to happen. Even after you got your 1964 Civil Rights Act that comes up for revote every 27 years, now you think you got something, and now you're expecting to get the same result as every other group. And they say it's not going to happen, and nor will it happen for generations to come. Gives you two reasons why it will never happen. First, the racist virus in the American bloodstream it still affects us. Negroes will encounter serious personal prejudice for at least another generation. Second, 3 centuries of sometimes unimaginable mistreatment have taken their tolls on the Negro people. The harsh fact is that as a group at the present times, in terms of the ability to win out in competition of the American life, they are not equal to most of these groups which they will be competing. Individual Negro Americans will reach highest peaks of achievement, but collectively, in the spectrum of the American ethic in religious and regional groups, where some get plenty and some get none, there were where some send 80% of their children to college and others pull them out at the eighth grade, Negroes are among the weakest. So what they're telling us is that racism is so thick in the bloodstream of America, it ain't going nowhere. And because we have suffered three centuries of sometime unimaginable mistreatment, the harsh fact is that you may get your rich millionaires, you'll get your Barack Obamas, you'll get your Oprah Winfrey's, you'll get your basketball and football players, but collectively as a people, you will fail because you are the weakest. Now, our condition bears witness to what they wrote in 1965. We are still the weakest. And
right.
We got all of these groups out here trying to say, come go with us. Because they know you're hurting. The report continues to say that in the terms of dollars of income, standards of living in the years of educational deceit, the gap between the Negro and most other groups in the American society is widening. They're telling you that you already, your education that you've been given, you've been deceived to think you got something when in actuality you got nothing.
Right,
but you got nothing. And then we wonder why we don't produce. Because the enemy will never give you what you need to produce what is required for you to come up. It goes on and says, the fundamental problem in which most clearly the case is that the family structure, the evidence is that the Negro family in the urban ghetto is crumbling. A middle-class group has managed to save itself, but for vast numbers of unskilled, poorly educated, city working-class fabric of the conventional social relationship has all but disintegrated. So as long as this situation persists, the cycle of poverty and disadvantage will continue to repeat itself. The Negro American Revolution is rightly regarded as the most important domestic event in the post-war period in the United States. The Black Muslim Doctrine, based on total alienation from the white world, exerts a powerful influence that can no longer be ignored. Then they got in parentheses, as well as communists from China. Well, no damn black people trying to be a communist like over there in China. The Black Muslim Doctrine, as it states, based on total alienation from the white world, exert a powerful influence that can no longer be ignored. It is clear that what happens in America is being taken as a sign of what can or what must happen in the world at large. The course of world events will be profoundly affected by the success or failure of the Negro American Revolution in seeking the peaceful assimilation of the races in the United States. The award of the Nobel Peace Prize to Dr. Martin Luther King was as much an expression of hope for the future as it was for recognition of past events. Well, the Black Muslim Doctrine is the danger that they cannot any longer ignore. That they're saying that our revolution, which is the most important revolution on the face of this earth, they got to derail it and send it in the path of Dr. Martin Luther King and his immigration thought. What is the Black Muslim Doctrine? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that Allah is God, pulling you away from that fake
Christianity, perfect slave-making religion. He's teaching you that there is no mystery God. He's teaching you that God is a man. He's teaching you that God came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad. He's teaching you who is the original man. He's teaching you to love yourself, understand yourself, help yourself so that you can help others. He's teaching you that Islam is the original religion. It is the true religion. Islam dignifies. Islam makes everything new. He teaches you about the Bible and how corrupt it is and brings out the truth of it. He gives you the Quran and he teaches you the truth of it. He shows you who is the devil. He teaches you everything that you need to know about this serpent, about that beast. He teaches you that he is the blood shedder. Then he teaches you prayer. He teaches you how to clean up and how to purify yourself so you can communicate yourself to the God and be able to come up out of your lethargy and out of your drunkenness and out of your stupor. He gives you the program and the position, what do Muslims want? And he explains what it is. He explains you the Muslim program of doing for self. He tells you, God, he just put this program before Congress. Not no damn program that the black congressman putting out, because it ain't worth a damn. He's telling you what you need for success. But you see, we got people, he gives you an economic program to help bring you up from where you are. They're telling you in the report that poverty will persist. The cycle won't break because they have no interest in breaking the damn cycle. No interest in breaking it because they make money off of us. They make money to keep us going to the liquor store and buying this cheap whiskey, this cheap wine, this cheap beer so you can keep killing yourself faster. He teaches you how to eat to live. He tells you about getting land. He teaches you about the judgment. And damn it, he even goes so far to answer the critic. So he's leaving no doubt. No doubt about what must be done. Now, what happens is Mr. Farrakhan has taught us that they feed us and put mannequins in the window.
Come
to
on,
sell
buddy.
Us the lie that America works. And some of us not even realizing that we're being used as mannequins. And I'm going to give you a quick example. When I worked for Acorn and I worked for a few other nonprofits, Acorn, again, a white organization helping black people, supposedly, our people, they sent me from Tennessee to Philadelphia. It's different in Philly than it is down here in Nashville. The poverty, the stuff that you see in Philly, you would never see here. The conditions of how our people live, you would not see that here, but you see it there. And when I got up there, in order to be a member of Acorn, you have to come out of $30 cash out your pocket when we knock on your door, or you have to give us your bank account information so that they can take the money straight out of your bank account. Now, we didn't have an ID. We didn't have anything to say that we're Acorn members. We didn't even have a damn badge or a shirt to say we were Acorn. The only thing we had was some copies of newspapers from other cities where they had newspaper write-ups. And we go to the door and we knock and they open the door and we explain them and we talk to them about economic opportunities of why you don't have what you need, why your neighborhood looks the way that it is. It's called neighborhood discrimination.
Wait a minute, Brother Maurice. I'm sorry. If somebody has their computer on, please mute it because we're getting the feedback and we want to be able to hear Brother Maurice clearly.
Right.
Okay, go ahead, Brother Maurice.
Yes, ma'am. So we knock on the door, and the people, our people come, because we ain't going to white neighborhoods. We ain't even going to poor white neighborhoods. We're going to where poor black people live. And we knock on the door, and they open it, and we tell them about what's going on in their community. And they let us in, and we tell them, and they, yeah, I want to join. I need you to help me. Okay, it's going to cost you $30. It's going to cost you your bank account information. And our people are hurting so bad that they don't even think twice about giving it. And this is during the time of ID theft and all of this false imprisonment and all this stealing people's identity, that they're in such a shape that they're turning over their money, they're turning over their bank account information, trusting because you knocked on the door and said, I'm going to help you, because I'm telling you what you already know, that you live in the worst condition and that other people don't live like this, but you have to accept this. So we're knocking on the door to say, hey, come here and let us help you. And after all, we get your money, and then you still living in the same condition. You ain't changed your reality, but every month money is coming out of your account, or every month you forking over dollars to keep giving to people because you suffering. Our people suffering there in cities like Philadelphia, in cities like Detroit, in cities like Chicago. Our people are suffering. There were Acorn agencies in all of these cities, all of these major cities, Washington, D.C., all of these, because our people were forking over the money. Well, one day, we were on our way to visit the governor and have a legislative session in Harrisburg. And on the bus, they were talking about people going in to see the governor. And I raised my hand because I wanted to go in, because I wanted to see what they're going to say. Now, I come into this organization, and they knew when I had my interview, well, your dad said, well, are you used to going door-to-door? I said, well, yeah, I'm used to going door-to-door because I do it with the Final Call newspaper, the Nation of Islam. So, yeah, I'm good with that. Oh, good. Yeah, you can talk. We're going to use this, Negro. You can talk. So we get in there, and I'm like, I want to go into it with the governor. And they said, no, you can't go. You can't go. They picked two other people, then gave them a list and said, this is what we want you to say when you get in there, and come over here and sit with these people so they can run you through it so you can get familiarized with it. One of the principles of ACORN is making leaders, making tomorrow's leaders. Well, hell, how in the hell are you making a leader when you picking who you want to go in there and you giving them a script to read when they get in there to see Massa? That ain't making no leader. That's making a puppet.
Right.
That's making a puppet. And that's what each and every one of these organizations, that's what they all do. They don't make real leaders. They make puppets to send them out there to speak for the masses, other people. But they not speaking what the people need. They speaking what their master told them to say. And because they came saying, I'm here to help you, they believe the lie and don't understand what the hell is going on, because they're blind, deaf, and dumb. So when we leave that and get to a big meeting where it's just the ACORN workers and their high officials, I got on them because I told them, this is not producing nothing for my people. This ain't fixing the ills of my people. You making puppets. You ain't making leaders. And I got on the other black that walked in and told, you know damn well this is no good. But we sell our people out for a paycheck. We sell them out for a paycheck because these nonprofits going to pay you well and you're going to accept it. And you're going to go along with the get along. So they asked me, or didn't ask me, but told me, why are you here? You don't belong here. And I looked at the cracker and said, no, I should be asking you that. You don't belong here. Needless to say, they got rid of me and sent me right on back to Tennessee. And then I got into another organization, and they sent me to Jackson,
and a tornado came through and messed up the city. Messed it up on all parts. But they fixed the white part, black part they didn't fix. So we fought them to get the money so that they can fix the black part since they used it to fix the white part. We got them in a meeting, and the city councilman, the black ones, just admitted it. One of them said, well, look here. The money is gone. It's spent. We spend it on the white areas, and we don't have it. I'm just telling you. Now, we all knew it, but we were shocked to hear them actually say that. The condition of our people is so bad, I got on to the city council at the meeting, and it was televised, and I whooped them in their chambers. I had people coming down from their offices, coming to shake my hand for what I had said, because it was the truth, and they finally found somebody to say what needed to be said and do the things that need to be done so they can get some sliver of what they think is justice. Because even though I'm awake, I wasn't fully awake at that point, but I'm just a sliver awake because I'm still being used as a mannequin in the storefront of the house called democracy. Then we got on the city so bad that they gave us our own school. We didn't have to pay nothing. They were going to upkeep it. We used it to do what needed to be done. And this is a black chapter in this white organization. And all the members wanted it, and it was supposed to be a membership-ran organization. But when I get back to the headquarters and I tell them about our victory, of how what we got, their turn was, you can't have it. You can't have it. It's too big. It's too much. We're not capable of dealing with it. And I'm like, how are you saying that when we fought for it? Y'all didn't fight for it. This is a membership-ran organization. Means that the members decide what we want and we go after it, and this is what we got from our hard, long fight. But now you telling us we can't have it. So after fighting and losing, I had to come back to my members and tell them. And that's when it crystallized on me as I was driving and crying that I sold my people out. That is a very hard reality, that when you get slapped with it and you understand what you have done.
Right.
It makes you sick to your soul, because all of these organizations say the same damn thing. And they keep running to the black community to make more money off of. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us the program for us to be free as a people. So the NAACP, the National Urban League, the Negro Fund, the National Action Network, all of these programs, they know about the report on 1965. They know that it says that it will never, the justices, the things that we want as American citizens, the rights that we believe we deserve, we will never get it. They know this. But they still sent us down that road of integration. God
right.
never said for us to integrate. And if we don't wake the hell up and fight them, because after the minister speaks, like Harry Belafonte came right behind the minister when the minister said, Tavis Smiley, no, let it burn. He came right behind the minister and said, no, you don't need to let it burn. Be firemen and put the fire out. I refuse to let my babies grow up in a place like this. We have to fight for equal rights. We got to fight for our American rights. You've been fighting all this damn time and you still haven't gotten it. And the report says you ain't going to never get it. And you still stupid enough to think you're going to get
right.
what you have never got. And that they already planned and knew you wouldn't get it.
then they said they got to stop the black Muslim doctrine. The program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they know it is our success. But are we pushing the program as hard as we can?
Right.
Are we building on every level like we should? And the answer to that is no, we're not.
That's right.
And that part is our fault.
Right.
That part is. Farrakhan came and rebuilt the work of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He took it from where Wallace destroyed it, where it was nothing. And on his faith, we came alive. We began to build on his faith. So he took the talent, he took what the messenger gave him and doubled it, tripled it. What are we doing with what we got? Have we doubled it? Have we tripled it? That's for us to do. We got some building to do. We got fighting to do. And if we don't pick up the standard bearer and do what needs to be done, then we all are no damn good and will be trotted under the foot. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, if you can't be some good on top of the ground, then maybe you'll be good under the ground. And
right.
He was speaking to those who sell drugs who refuse to stop. Muhammad don't make faggots.
That's right.
Muhammad don't make brooks.
Come on.
Muhammad makes men.
Come on, black
man. And I'm going to close with
Peace.
This. When I was in my driving class today, the instructor, after it was over and I came to get my paperwork, he says, were you born in America? Are you from overseas? I said, no, I was born right here. He says, you're a Muslim? I says, yes, sir, I'm a Muslim. He says, have you heard of Louis Farrakhan? I said, yes, I've heard of him. That's my spiritual father. He's the one who gave me life. He says, oh, okay, so you know about this showdown. What is with this showdown? You do know that that's not going to bring all of us together. You do know this, right? And I said, well, I don't care about everybody being together. That's not my thing. I want the showdown so I can see my spiritual father whoop your ass.
Right.
So thank you. You have a great day. Truth has come to you. And got my paper and walked up on out of there. I'm
right.
Not here to integrate with the wicked. We're not here to integrate with the wicked.
That's right.
We're here to produce what the plan the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave to us. And anything outside of that ain't good enough. He didn't teach integration, he taught separation. And that is what the Honorable Minister Lewis, he don't want us to integrate with the wicked. He don't want us to do that. What I'm saying, pick up your standard and let's get to work. Double our efforts so that we can fight off this enemy because they wish to drown him up and shut him down. But we now have to fight the fight and do the things that need to be done. Thank you for listening.
Okay, listen, I think we got one question, and we're going to take it from area code 281. Did you have a question?
Yes, ma'am. Salaam alaikum. How are we doing this evening?
Alaikum salaam. Dear brother, how are you?
Blessed by the grace and mercy of Almighty God, Allah, His Savior, and the man before us, Brother Farrakhan. I don't actually have a question. I got a statement that I just want to put out there, and I just want to see how would the minds reflect off of the statement.
Yes, sir.
The statement is, since the minister said America has no more grace, have we thought of what might happen immediately at the end of this 52-week series of grace? Are we just hearing the minister and not physically storing food, survival kits, codes, run the viewpoints of location to meet family members of believers? Do we remember the shock of the hour, and are we prepared? And when I put the statement out, I'm really trying to see if, in fact, we are inviting people to this understanding. You know, the Holy Quran teaches us to invite them into the teachings of Islam. And I'm asking, are we, as a unit, inviting others and ourselves to this understanding that at the end of this 52-week series, that it could be total catastrophe for those of us who say we believe, but we hadn't made that preparation to have some of the things necessary. Example, in the Bible it says that there will be famine, there will be storms, there will be flood, there will be snow. Well, why is Allah telling us that? Because I want you to have something to survive the snow with. I want you to have something to survive the earthquake with. Do you have any type of small tools, shovels, that you can dig your way out? Do you have any water? Do you have anything stored up? I'm giving you what I'm going to bring so you can have yourself ready that when I come. Because when I come and you're not ready, I can't give you no mercy and grace because you didn't believe I was really coming.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, let me let Brother Student Minister James answer your question, dear brother.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir, beloved. And I have to say sorrowfully that you are absolutely right. Many of us listen to the teaching, and we are moved by the spirit of the word, no question. But when it comes down to the actual work of preparing for what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is warning us of, as well as the Quran, we must remember that the Quran says, beware of a chastisement that does not encompass the guilty exclusively. Which means what you are actually saying, dear brother. We must prepare. And many of us are not preparing, I sorrowfully have to say. There are, of course, those who are sponsoring disaster preparedness seminars and conferences, and I believe there are those that are teaching the sisters canning and the storage of food and water and such, but not nearly enough. And so I'm glad that you brought that statement up, dear brother, and that reality up. And while I'm on that, this is a warning. Brother gave us a warning. We just can't be hearers of the word. We have to be doers of the word, particularly.
Teach, brother. Teach on that. Teach on that now.
Yes, sir.
Particularly when it comes to the instruction of storing food and other necessities so that we could get through this hard time. Remember, the minister said there'll be 3 years that the believers will have to go through. The first one will be very difficult. The second will be worse. And the third will be the worst of all. He said, but those of us who get through that 3-year period will make it into the hereafter. And I'll close on this point. In the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's historic Savior's Day address, 1995, entitled Jesus Saves, he made the statement, to the degree that we discipline our lives according to the teachings that we have accepted as truth, it is to that same degree that our salvation will be had. And so we've got to be obedient to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I'm glad you brought that up there, brother, and that's a reminder and an admonishment not only to me, to those of us on the panel, and hopefully to those of us who are listening, but this is a very dangerous hour, dear brothers and sisters.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's
and
right.
We've got to respond in the manner that the brother is so wisely and timely cautioning us about. Thank you, brother, for your question and your statement. Thank you. You're right on the money.
That's right.
Yes, sir. And I want to encourage you that if you don't know these people, you can check with any of your local mosques, Brother William Muhammad out of Kentucky and Brother Rudolph T. Muhammad teaches those survival skills.
That's right.
And they come to every mosque. With an invitation to teach, you know, not only the people in the mosque, but as well as in the community. So if you don't know them personally, reach out to your local mosque, and they will be more than willing to come and provide that service to your area. Okay, we have gone way past time, and all praise is due to Allah. He's working because they have not cut us off yet, and they have not even cut off the people in the chat room. So thank all of you who, for all the time that you have sat with us and listened to us defend the minister and defend his position and the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I cannot thank Allah enough for my distinguished, very well versed, and so passionate panelists tonight. I want to give a thank you to student minister, prison minister Victor Muhammad, student in the ministry, Brother Clyde Muhammad, student minister James Muhammad, Brother Kareem Muhammad, Brother Maurice Muhammad, Brother Walter Muhammad, Brother Jahar Ali, and I don't think I left out anybody, did I?
Yes,
Brother
you did.
Daniel Muhammad from Chicago. Okay, forget about Brother Daniel. Thank all of you and all of you who joined us on the phones and you still here. Thank you all so much for your time and for your support. We love you. One nation, one love. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam from Houston, Texas.
Oh. Thank you, brother, and join us tomorrow, 8 p.m., study group. Student Minister James Muhammad is going to talk about the time of what must be done, part 20. So please join us right here tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, and we'll try to keep you not past 10. We'll try. Thank you, family. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.